It is a real delight for me to be with you tonight. We've had a very enjoyable day. We'll be looking tonight at the marks of a church planter. Thinking some of the story about a young man who wanted to learn how to hunt, and an older gentleman volunteered to teach him how to hunt. So they made an appointment about 6 a.m. The older gentleman would come by, pick him up, and they would go and they would learn the fine art of hunting. You might know that the older gentleman got there a little early, about a half an hour early, and of course the young man was still in bed. They roused him, got him dressed. They went to the place where all the big ducks fly, and they lay on the cold, hard ground for about 2 hours waiting for a single duck. And after 2 hours of lying on the ground, sure enough, one lone duck crosses the sky. The older gentleman whispered to the younger gentleman, "All right, watch this." He raised his gun and he fired a shot. And that shot broke the silence of the morning, and that duck continued to fly. And then the gentleman looked over to the younger man and he says, "Son, you're witnessing a real miracle. There flies one dead duck." Well, I just want you to know that you're going to witness two miracles tonight. Number one is, if I can finish this message after eating that barbecue dinner, I've never eaten anything so hot in all my born days. That was not a McDonald's hamburger. And I know you all will be sitting there enjoying it the second and third time, but I'm standing up here. The other miracle is if you can be here this whole day and still be alert, and I trust that that will be indeed the case as we begin to look at the marks of a church planter. I want to direct our attention tonight to a very familiar portion of Scripture, so familiar that we'll just read portions of it, but I trust that God will indeed challenge our thinking tonight as we look at the marks of a church planter. Hebrews chapter 10, the book of Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 38. Hebrews 10, verse 38. "Now the just shall live by faith. But if any man draw back, my soul shall have no pleasure in him." Chapter 11 and verse 1. "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." Verse 6. "But without faith it is impossible to please him. For he that cometh to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith." I believe we'll stop our reading there. I have in mind tonight the mark of a church planter is this: one who pleases God. How do you please God? I believe that if we were to sit down and begin to make a list of things that please God, we would probably have a long list and a complicated list. And may I suggest tonight that list could be abbreviated in this way: one who pleases God is one who walks by faith. The mark of a church planter, if I were to try to summarize it as concisely as I could, I would say this: he is one who walks by faith. Hebrews 11 is a dangerous passage to preach from when you have an audience full of preachers. I recognize that. And I guess I'm willing to take that risk tonight. I realize that as we come to this chapter, there's nothing new that I will tell you. Every verse, every story, every character is well known to you. But I trust that somehow God might impress upon us the need to be men and women of faith. For that pleases God. And the mark of a church planter is one that pleases God. When we talk about faith, normally we tend to think of faith as to how we were saved. And it is how we were saved. It is a precious truth of Ephesians 2, 8 and 9. "For by grace are you saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast." We know that we're saved by faith, and we rejoice in that. But I believe Hebrews 11 goes beyond that, don't you? I believe that it's not just talking about the fact that we are saved by faith, but it says in chapter 10, verse 38, we live by faith. Now the just shall live by faith. Let me ask you this. When was the last time you really lived by faith? You say, well, you don't understand. I don't have a salary. No, that's not really what I mean. When was the last time that you found yourself living by faith? And that's probably the last time we pleased God. I really believe that part of the problem today is that we have carved out for ourselves a little ministry of some kind or another. And we are doing that ministry more to please ourselves and to please those around us than we are to please God. And I believe the thing that pleases God is when people, men and women, walk by faith. And so we're saved by faith. We are to live by faith. It says in 2 Corinthians 5:7, "For we walk by faith, not by sight." We walk by faith. And then it says, verse 4 of 1 John 5, "We overcome by faith." This is incredible. We are saved by faith, we live by faith, we walk by faith, we overcome by faith, and faith pleases God. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Yet when we talk about faith, for some reason, we always have a feeling that faith is that thing that we don't understand. And yet, Hebrews 11 says, it is the evidence of things not seen. What is faith? Well, I believe that faith, first of all, must have an object. The most important thing about faith is the object. And I believe sometimes, if we are not careful, we may have our faith in our plan. Or we may have our faith in one another. And I believe that Hebrews 11 is written so that every single thing that a person might have faith in will be stripped away, and a person will be reduced to helplessness, and he will realize the object, the only real, legitimate object of faith is Christ. What really is the thing that motivates us, that we trust in? I hope that I will not be misunderstood. I hope that no one will go out of here and say, what we really need to do is to have a plan and to believe in that plan. Now, I'm all for having a plan, as you know from our sessions earlier today. But I believe that our faith is not to be in our plan. Our faith is to be in God. Our faith is to be in God's Word. And when our faith is in God, my dear friend, that is what will ignite us to plan and to pray and to move ahead. Faith, real faith, produces a sense of helplessness. We don't like to admit that. But when we are most effective, it is when we realize how helpless we are. I believe the mark of a church planter is one who pleases God and one who is walking by faith. Faith produces commitment, and faith produces surrender. Faith must be nurtured, Romans 10 and 7. Faith cometh by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. There's no such thing as having a giant faith without it being nurtured. I find that in every character in Hebrews 11. Faith produces a daringness to act on the object of faith alone. It takes faith to please God. Do we really live by faith? The mark of a church planter is one who lives by faith. I think that there are two ways to go through life, even as a Christian. I think one way is to live by faith, and another way is to live by sight. Now let me ask you this. Which way is more sure? Which way is safer? Which way is the most exciting? And which way pleases God? And may I say that God has designed men and women to live by faith. And yet, in my own self, I have to say that from time to time, I look at those things that I see by sight and I say, that's got to be the more sure path. That has got to be the safest way. That has to be the way with the least amount of risk. And yet, what pleases God? And if there's one thing that I could use to describe this day and time, I think it would be this: cover all the bases. Never make it so that you're at a risk. Never put yourself so that if you fail utterly. Always make it so that when you fail, or if you fail, you can cover it up. My dear friend, that's why the Bible says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. On a scale of 1 to 10, without faith, you come 0. Well, we like to think, you know, look, maybe 4. Would you believe 3? We wouldn't mind shooting for a 2. And he says, without faith, it is impossible to please God. You see, he requires that we believe in a God that we have never seen. We rest our salvation in a person that we have never met. We believe a manuscript, and none of us in this room have ever personally met a single man who penned any part of the Bible. And yet we trust in it. My dear friends, I believe the essence of the Christian life is that we live by faith. And yet it is contrary to all that we find around us. But at the same time, the thing that every man has in common is every day we exercise faith. Do you know that? How many of you knew, before we went into the restaurant, how many of you knew the chef? You ate the food. How many of you ever met the engineer that designed this building? And yet you came in and subjected yourself to this engineer passing his design course. How many of you come to an intersection and you stop your car, and before you proceed to, you go to the opposite intersection and you check the driver's license to make sure that this is a duly registered driver going through the other way? We don't do that. We just accept it, don't we? You see, the thing that is not unusual is for people to believe in something. But normally, the object of our faith is other people. To please God, he requires that we trust in him. He becomes the object of our faith. He becomes more important to us than our sight. And so, let me just simply admit to you that I believe that if we are to please God, that we are to walk by faith. And there is an enemy to faith, and the enemy to faith is sight. There is an evidence of faith. It is obedience. And there is an effect of faith. It is blessing. Don't you like it when they all begin with the same letter? I struggle with that. The enemy of faith is sight. That may be the thing that holds us back, is our sight. We tend to trust our sight. We live in a day and a time when we are sight-oriented. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. Are you pleasing God? Let me ask you this. When was the last time you embarked on a work for God that you had to confess, in and of myself, I'm not able to do it? You see, we tend to do those things that we think we can handle with our own natural abilities, don't we? We trust in sight. And I believe we are limited then to those things that we can carry off in our own power. And we cannot please God. I believe that God is pleased when we admit our helplessness. When we embark on a task that only God could do. So that when we are done, everyone is keenly aware it was not done by men, but it was a work of God. May I ask you this? Are we pleasing God because we walk by faith? Walking by faith, then, does not talk about what God might do, but it talks about what God will do. Isn't that more fun? Isn't that a more exciting way to live? Isn't that a better way? It doesn't talk about the possibility that something will happen. It talks about the promise that it will happen. Do we feed the enemy of faith and live only by sight? Do we show the evidence of faith? And that is marked by implicit obedience. There are no shortcuts. There are no compromises. Obedience stands as an evidence of real faith. And then, do we enjoy the effect of faith? It is full, rich blessing that only a work of God can give. As we look at Hebrews 11, I realize that in the time we have, we will only be able to mention some of the characters and hopefully pick up some of the characteristics of these people to show us the marks of a church planter. The marks of a church planter, I believe, would be someone who lives by faith, who recognizes their helplessness, and who sees the object of faith, Christ, in His Word. How close are we to a man of faith? And among the first characters that I want us to look at tonight is the character in verse 7 of Noah. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear. Don't you like that phrase? I have it underlined in my Bible. Moved with fear. The characteristics of a church planter. I believe that Noah was a person who was marked by faith. And I believe that Noah has some characteristics that God would be pleased if those characteristics were in us. I don't know if you've ever thought much about the story of Noah, other than the giant tale of building an ark and having animals on it and living with those animals for a long period of time. But I want you to consider just for a moment the environment of Noah. I want to suggest to you that it was the worst environment that the world has ever known. Every once in a while, we look around at the sin around us, and we believe that maybe we live in the worst time. No, it may be tied for the worst, but it cannot be the worst. Because where Noah lived, and when Noah lived, it was so bad that God had to destroy it. It says in chapter 6, verse 5, every imagination of man was evil. Their thoughts were continually evil. Verse 11, the earth was filled with violence. Verse 13, all flesh was violent. The earth was filled with corruption. God said, I will destroy the earth. Verse 17, it was worldwide. My dear friend, I believe that Noah lived in about as contaminated an environment as you could ever be in. Next, in addition to what I call active sin that is described in Genesis 6, I think there is a passive sin of the day. Matthew 24, verses 37 through 39, it talks about the fact that they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day Noah entered into the ark. I see this as the passive. They continued life in a normal way. I look around and sometimes I think that we excuse ourselves from doing a work for God because we believe that today is more evil than any other time. We believe that people are more apathetic today than any other time. And Noah would argue differently. His environment ought to be an encouragement to us, for we have the indwelling of the Spirit of God. We have the promises of a written word. What did Noah have? The story is incredible. In my own mind, I try to picture, how would it be? How would it be for Noah on that day? And in my mind, I picture that one night, fairly late, in his study, there on the red phone, the phone rings. He knew it had to be God. God was the only one that had the number, and so he answers, hello. And God says, Noah, I want you to build an ark. And the line goes dead. And Noah says, an ark. An ark. And he goes over to Webster's dictionary and he looks it up. A-R-K. Has not been built yet. You know, and about 2 days later, UPS delivers him a whole roll of blueprints. And he takes these things out. He spreads them out on his desk, you know. And after several weeks of studying, his wife comes by and says, honey, what are you working on? He says, an ark. She says, oh, that's nice. What's an ark? He says, well, it's a large boat. Well, that's nice. And I can just see when he announces one Saturday to his sons, hey, guys, today we're going to go out in the woods and we're going to mark some trees. We're going to build a boat. I can see those boys saying, boy, Dad, that'll be great. I mean, you know, we've heard this skiing, it's really in. And I can see him chopping down, you know, 15, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 trees. And the guys are saying, you know, Dad, if you're planning to row this boat, I mean, this is going to be a hard job. And I can see the months turn into years and the years turn into 10 years. And every night after school, guess what those boys worked on? And every weekend, guess what they worked on? And I can just hear Mrs. Noah saying one day, you know, honey, are you really sure that it was God that called you that night? We don't read that God came and every week reminded him to build an ark. As best we know, one time, God says, build an ark. And Noah spends 120 years
building an ark. My dear friend, how could you do it? There's only one way.
To have faith in God. That's the only way you could do it. And I could see Mrs. Noah come and say, "You know, honey, I don't mind you having a hobby, but why don't you take up golf or bowling like all the other men? I hear it's a lot of fun." But they're in the backyard, hundreds of miles away from the nearest lake, is this huge, monstrous boat. And every day, every neighbor saw it on the way to work. And every kid that went to the school, they made fun of his sons. Every time his wife went to the grocery store, they said, "How are you coming on the family project?" I mean, it was synonymous with a joke. And this man faithfully builds an ark, a huge ship, hundreds of miles from a lake. My dear friend, do you realize that up to that time, there hadn't even been a cloud in the sky? There had never been rain. There was no such thing as a flood. And this man builds an ark. I don't know about you, but I say, "Oh God, if I would have been Noah, I think after a month or two, I would have said, 'You know, Lord, I think I'll pray about this a little bit.'" But my dear friend, Noah being warned of God of things not seen as yet. There was no precedence. He could not go and say, "You know, I read of a flood they had way back then. I there was nothing. It had never happened before. Nothing like this had ever crossed the mind of any man." There's only one way that this man would ever build an ark. If he trusted in God. My friend, I don't mind telling you, I think that it must have been a lonely time, don't you? I think that man must have agonized before God and said, "God, why does no one else respond? Just my wife, just my sons, just their wife. Why no one else?" And my dear friend, I believe that if we're to be church planters, there's going to be times it's lonely. The environment is dark. You know in your bosom that you've heard a call from God and no one else hears it. No one else sees it. And my dear friend, unless we walk by faith, we will not please God. And I can see one afternoon, I can see these people, and it's a typical Saturday, they're making fun of Noah. "Noah, you know, you've been working on that thing so long. When are you going to finish?" And someone says, "Hey, did you spit on me?" "No, but someone spit on me." "Well, I'll be. What's going on?" They've never seen rain. And the shower turns to a downpour. The downpour begins to fill every gully and every valley. And the water continues to rise. And I can see the panic begin to set in as these men return home. And they gather their families and they rush to the ark. "Noah! Noah! Let me in! Noah! I was for you all the time. Really, I really think there were people. I think there were people that said, 'Noah, I'm sorry. Noah.'" My dear friend, I believe the Bible said Noah moved with fear. That pleased God. He trusted in God. He'd never seen rain. He'd never seen a flood. He'd never seen a prototype of the ark. But God called him to do a special work. We read in 2 Peter chapter 2, he was a preacher of righteousness. I like to think he preached two ways. One, by his actions. Every day as he worked, what a message it was. And I like to think that he tried to answer those charges. Noah pleased God because he walked by faith. What if God were to call you? Would you please God? Would the object of Christ be so big in your life, in your mind? Would you be more set on Him you have never seen than on the world around us? There's another mark of a church planter. I see it in Abraham. Verse 8. "By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing where he went. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a foreign country, dwelling in tents. What a story. Faith pleases God. Abraham shows faith. It manifests itself in obedience. It literally says in verse 8, when he was called, he left at the same time. As God was talking to him, he was on the way out the door. Do you ever argue with God? Sometimes as I pray, and I know what God has answered, and I'm not pleased with the answer, and so I try to reword it. Do you ever do that? Wouldn't it have been tempting in Abraham's case to do that? And I can see Abraham as he goes for the door, and he's got his bags and he's on his way out, and they say, "Hey, Abe," that's what they call him for short, "where are you going?" He says, "Well, I don't really know." "Well, how long are you going to be gone?" "I don't know that either." "What are you going to do?" "I'm not sure." "Why are you going?" "Because God told me to move out." He left his family. He left a comfortable situation. You see, we think that God is not aware of how tough it might be to live by faith, but he is. Abraham shows us obedience in action. Abraham trusted God. The voice of God was more real to Abraham than anything around him. What about to us? He began moving as God was still talking. Is that the way God commissions you? Do you go willingly? Or is it in a stubborn way? Does God literally have to back us into the corner before we go? Does God have to shut every other option before we know we can go? You know, the incredible thing is that Abraham would never see the end of God's promise. He would say to Abraham, as Abraham would walk out that night, "Abraham, I'm going to give you a large family. I'm going to make you a great nation. Abraham, I'm going to give you a great land. Abraham, I'm going to bless all the people in the world through you." And when Abraham dies, guess how many children he has? Boy, where is he when he dies? All of his life, he lives in a tent. After the call of God on this night, it's years before God speaks to him again. And I don't mind telling you, I think I would have said, God, say something to me. Let me know, are you real? I've left my home. I've left my family. Where do I go now? And it says this, that Abraham lived in a tent, separate from all. My dear friend, to do that, you would have to walk by faith, wouldn't you? You would have to really believe the God that called you to do it. And that's the only way that God is pleased. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. He never became a citizen. He never gets over to the land that God spoke of. He never builds a house. He just lives in a tent. And at the end of his life, you would think that literally he was a failure. But guess what? When he dies, he passes on to his son. He says, "Listen, Isaac, I know this, that God promised these things and he'll fulfill them. Maybe in your lifetime." And when Isaac dies, guess how many children he has? Just two. But is God faithful? My dear friend, I wonder this. Would we please God if we live in God's timetable? It's incredible, isn't it? I look at the life of Abraham, and I see in there that real faith manifests itself in obedience, implicit obedience. As God is speaking, Abraham is leaving the house. Next, I see that faith manifests itself in patience. He sojourns an entire lifetime, never seeing the completeness of God's promise. I see this. that faith manifests itself in delays, and it did not result in discouragement. Faith was undisturbed by location. It didn't matter where he lived. And finally, faith was undisturbed by impossibilities. It's a thrilling story, isn't it? Look at verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. Remember the story? A willingness to offer up Isaac. I want to remind you that there is no other way to please God other than by faith. Total, complete, helpless surrender in God Himself. Nothing on the side to lean against, but only the object of your faith. But isn't He enough to sustain us? And remember that after those years of silence, finally God comes to Abraham and He says, Abraham, Abraham. And Abraham says, here am I. What a relief to have you talk to me again. Genesis 22 records the story. Abraham, take thine son, thy only son, whom thou lovest. Why did he say that? Oh, I would have had an argument already. I would have said, God, you know, I've got two sons. I'm not sure what to do with Ishmael anyway. I'll offer him up. God says, no, I only see one son. I think I would have had another argument. I would have said, God, look out there on the hillside. You see all the cattle. Early in the morning, I will slaughter every one of those. You spare my son. God said, no. I would have had yet another argument. You see, I thought about this, haven't I? I would have said, God, he's only a child. He's only a teenager. You let him marry. You let him have children. And then I will slaughter him. And God says, take thine only son whom thou lovest now. And early the next morning, Abraham is on his way to Mount Moriah. Oh, I can see that voice say, Dad, you know, of all the dads, you've got to be the best in all the world. I mean, what dad, as important as you, as busy as you are, would take a whole 3 days off just to be with me on a camping trip? Dad, you are some dad. And I can see them making their way. And Isaac said, you know, Dad, every kid at school envies me. And as they get closer, Abraham says to those servants, all right, you remain here. The lad and I will go on. And I can see them as they get up there. And Isaac said, you know, Dad, you thought of everything. You brought the stuff to build an altar. Dad, you've got the wood. Dad, you thought of it. You know, Dad, there's one thing you forgot. Dad, you know what you forgot? I mean, of all the things that you forgot, you didn't bring a sacrifice. And Abraham says, son, put your arms behind you. I see that father begin to bind that son. He takes him and he lays him on the altar. Isaac says, Dad, what have I done? What have I done? Why me? Why now? Why this? And I see Abraham take that knife. And he raises that knife and he's ready to come with that knife through the bosom of that son that he loved. I think that the son rose and set on that boy, don't you? I think he was at every Little League basketball game he played in, every football game he was in, every checker match he was in. Abraham was there to see his son. It was the apple of his eye. I think God said, okay, Abraham, I know where you need to be tested, and here it is. And Abraham was willing to bring that knife down, and on the way God says, Abraham, Abraham, and he answers, here am I. He was still available. God said, Abraham, stop. Look over there in the thicket. In my mind, I like to think that Isaac said, you know, Dad, if you just cut me loose, I'll be happy to go and get that. I'll tell you, that's incredible faith, isn't it? The Bible says this. Verse 19, accounting that God was able to raise him up even from the dead. Abraham said, I'm so confident that God will fulfill His promise. If I bring the knife through His bosom, He'll come alive again. He'll resurrect. There's never been resurrection until now.
And Abraham believes his God to the point of resurrection. My dear friend, I believe the mark of a church planter is one that's not afraid to stand all alone like Noah. In an unpopular day, doing an unpopular thing. But he works faithfully and he preaches righteousness. And I believe it's like Abraham. We may not be able to see the end. The greatest test and the greatest task may be our own family, our own children. But my dear friend, I believe this, that those that would please God must walk by faith. And the mark of a church planter is this. He is one who walks by faith. Look, if you will, at verse 24. There are others, and we don't have time for them all. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured to see him who is invisible. Through faith he kept the Passover. There are so many parallels here. We don't have time for them all tonight, but let me suggest several of them to you. By faith, Moses refused. My dear friend, I really believe that one of the things that we face today, the mark of a church planter, is he has to make some critical choices and some definite refusals. Have you noticed that? I think there comes a time when every one of us, if we're going to really walk by faith, we're going to have to say no to some things that look mighty attractive. And I don't mind telling you, I think that to a slave, Egypt would have to look mighty attractive, don't you? Now, I go to Egypt today, and I've got to be honest with you, I'm not very attracted to the flies, nor to the diet, and even to the sand dunes. But I think it looked different in those days, don't you? It was the apex of civilization. It was the height of all that man could learn or accomplish or do. And Moses, according to the book of Acts, was talented and gifted. Moses was raised in the palace. How do you picture Moses? How do you picture Moses? Well, most of us picture him as an invincible leader, don't we? Leading some 3 million people across the desert. We think he looks like Charlton Heston. We think his aftershave lotion glows with Shekinah glory. But that's not fair. That's the finished product. Moses had to find out what it was to trust God in a surrendering way. You remember the story. Moses went in his own strength. And one day he sees an Egyptian and an Israelite fighting. And as they are fighting, Moses kills the Egyptian. I can see him saying, that takes care of one of them. I mean, I've delivered one Jew. I've only got 2,999,999 to go. And the next day, when two Jews are fighting, and Moses comes to settle it, they said, are you going to kill us the way you did the Egyptians? He says, how did you know that? The guy says, hey, you're on every wanted post, you know, the post office. I mean, there's your face. And Moses runs. I remember on the backside of the desert, it's an incredible scene. Because after those long years, this talented, gifted man, if you believe secular history, in the Battle of Ethiopia, he had won every medal you could win. They had him collecting in a box. He was mighty in word and in deed. And there he is, a lonely shepherd. My dear friend, I think that sometimes God has to bring us to that. I think this is when Moses made some critical choices, don't you? And he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I believe that a mark of a church planter is this. I see the talents and the gift that God seems to use in people to plant churches. And you're going to have to say no to some mighty interesting options. Have you noticed that?
I have seen people that I believe are using gifts that God has given them and are doing well in business. They are successful because they have employed those gifts in ways other than in the Lord's work. Moses had that option. Again, if you believe secular history, three times Moses is offered to be Pharaoh. And three times Moses says no. Because if I'm Pharaoh, I have to think like an Egyptian, I have to act like an Egyptian, and I'm not an Egyptian. And Moses refused. Moses chose. Moses chose by faith. Moses chose to be counted as a slave. I believe those are important choices. And yet those are choices that we must make. And yet there is another idea in verse 28 that I think is especially important. Through faith, he kept the Passover. Wouldn't it have been tempting for one as busy, as important as Moses to say, you know what, I think I can be excused from the Passover? Here, I believe, is an important mark of a church planter. My dear friend, if we're not careful, we get so busy with our service that we forget it is our relationship with God that pleases Him. I really believe that too often we become a victim of being busy. We begin to get the idea that if we don't do it, no one else will do it. We begin to think that if the job is going to get done, we must do it. Too often we are afraid to say, no, I cannot go. No, I cannot take any more. No, I cannot come tonight. Because we really believe that some way, somehow, the plan of God will not get done unless we do it all ourselves. By faith, Moses kept the Passover. He recognized that as important as he was, it says in Exodus that every household knew and feared Moses. He was better known than Pharaoh because of the plagues. And yet Moses said, I am not exempt from that basic relationship that I need with God. Let me ask you this. Do we pray as we ought? Do we read as we should? Let me ask you this. What are you memorizing right now? What are you studying? And my dear friend, if we are not praying, if we are not studying, if we are not memorizing, then I really believe we have things out of order. And I don't believe that God would have ever been pleased with Moses and accepted him as one to deliver the people if he would have not kept the Passover by faith. Do you? For without faith, it is impossible to please God. And I look around at those that are serving God, and sometimes it almost seems that we want an exemption from those basic things. We are so busy serving God, we don't pray. We are so busy serving God, we do not memorize. We are so busy serving God that to our embarrassment, we spend more time on the phone, we spend more time counseling than we do in the presence of God. And my dear friend, I don't think that pleases God, do you? What a calling was that of Moses. You remember the story. They're on the backside of the desert. Much has been made of the story of the burning bush. I like the conversation that follows. And God says, Moses, I've heard your prayer. I've seen the sufferings of the people of God. I've seen how that the Hittites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the electric lights and the termites have persecuted the people of God, and I'm going to deliver them. And Moses says, I've been praying for that for 40 years. And then God says, Moses, I'm going to use you. And all of a sudden, Moses develops a speech problem. I hear you, right? You thought I said, here am I, and I said, who am I? Who? God says, stop being an owl. Listen, we're the same way, aren't we? You see,
God had to strip Moses to where he was helpless, hopeless, till he surrendered all. And my dear friend, then, by faith, Moses kept the Passover. God would call Moses to stand in front of Pharaoh. He would call Moses to have one plague after another. He would lead out over 1 million Jews. He would direct them toward a wilderness with a sea ahead of him and Pharaoh's army behind him. What do you do with a sea ahead of you and Pharaoh's army behind you? Fly they could not. Swim, not practical. Hopeless to all human reason. Destruction expected. And as the people saw the army of Pharaoh closing in, I love the verse in Exodus 14. Listen to this. It says this, that Moses cried to God. Don't you love that? Moses only had one recourse. He couldn't talk to the people. They wouldn't talk to him. There was only one person left for Moses to talk to. And with the army pressing a sea in front of him, he cries to God. It wasn't the cry of helplessness. It was the cry of faith. He said, God, I didn't choose to be here. I didn't born all these people. Have you ever said that about the assembly? God, I didn't choose them. Really. They were not the ones that I wanted to stay. But here they are. I didn't born them all. But Moses prayed. All right, God, now what? Fear not. That's easy. That's easy to say. Hard to do with Pharaoh's army pressing in, wouldn't you say? Stand still. Doesn't that raise a few questions in your mind as the army's getting closer?